Good afternoon, everyone. For several Sunday afternoons now, we've been looking at some of the Old Testament characters. And this afternoon, we're going to look at Joshua and Caleb. These are two men who stand out among the 12 spies. They are 12 men who are chosen, who are leaders, as Tommy read for us there in our scripture reading. And they're selected from each tribe, and they are put forth to be the ones that Moses sends out to spy the land of promise that God had promised that he would give it to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob. And Hoshea from Moses names him Joshua, and we also know Caleb. Now the other 10 spies, and I'm going to try to say them, but they are Shuma, Shaphat, Igal, Patol, Gadil, Gadi, Emuel, Sethuel, Nahabai, and Geluel. You just don't know who they are. When I say those, you're not going, oh yeah, those 10 men. They are just really names of forgotten history, though they're recorded. And while we can often rattle out the apostles or the judges or the 12 tribes or something of that nature, we just don't tend to memorize these 10 spies that said we cannot do it. But Joshua and Caleb, we do know. And we know their names because of their great faith, the faith and the trust that they had in Jehovah God, who had brought them out of Egypt. And they have a great faith and a great trust in Jehovah of Israel. Joshua is from the tribe of Ephraim, we learn, and Caleb is from the tribe of Judah. And as I mentioned, they're both selected as leaders within their tribes. So I want you to think about, and we're given totals of the various tribes, how many men of war they have in, at times in the biblical account. But I want you to think about how this would be, okay, we want you to select one person from your tribe that's a leader, and this is who I want you to put forth. And just think about it from that standpoint, that Joshua is the man that is selected, and Caleb is the man who is selected for his tribe. What does that say about these two? And what would it say about the other 10? It would say that there's a lot of confidence in these men, that they are, in fact, leaders. What does it say about Joshua and Caleb and their leadership skills? I mean, that's why they're put forth, and there is skill in leadership. And so we often say something like, well, this is the best of the best that they've put forth from their tribe. And so that says a lot about them. But what makes these two men, as we know, stand out from the 12 is their positive report that they give, having been sent into the promised land and having spied it. Let's look at Numbers 13. So hopefully you're there in Numbers. And we'll look at a number of passages in 13 and 14. But if you look at chapter 13 and in verse 27, it says, then they told him and said, we went to the land where you sent us. It truly flows with milk and honey, and this is its fruit. You remember they had found a cluster of grapes so large that they put it on a pole and carried it. And again, this is when you think about the Bible classes and the children, and you think about, well, what kind of activity did you have? Well, you probably had two men carrying on a pole a big cluster of grapes, and they were asked to color that or something of that nature, and you would talk about how these spies came. But I want you to notice from our perspective what's being said. What's being told is that what had God said about the land that he was sending them to? He said, it's a land that flows with milk and honey. What do they come back and tell the rest of them? It's a land that flows with milk and honey. And by the way, look at how much produce there is. Now, in verse 28, nevertheless, and this is where it all starts to fall apart. Because what you find is you begin to say, yes, the land flows with milk and honey. But verse 28, they said, nevertheless, the people who dwell in the land are strong. So, yeah, it's as you said, but there's a lot of strong people there. And not only that, but they have these cities. And they're not only that, they're strong cities, and they are large cities, and they are fortified cities. The cities are fortified and very large. Moreover, we saw the descendants of Anak and they lived there. Well, let's jump ahead to verse 33. There we saw the giants, the descendants of Anak, came from the giants, and we were like grasshoppers in our own sight, and so we were in their sight. So they come back and they say, yeah, it's a land, but you know, these people are strong, and their cities are large, and they've got walls, and they're fortified. And not only that, but they're giants. There's giants in this land, and we're just like little bitty grasshoppers. Now that's enough to create all kinds of problems. Because what this did is this report created a lot of doubt and complaint among the multitude. See, they were convinced that, like they would often do, we should have stayed in Egypt. We should have never come. We should have not come. They were convinced that they should have been left to just die out in the wilderness. It reminds you, we often say, it sounds like they're being a little dramatic. But this is how they're, this is what they're saying. We're just insignificant. And so what they're doing is they're creating doubt and they're complaining. And so if we go into the land which flows in milk and honey, guess what? We're going to die. If we go in there, we're going to die. And you know what else is going to happen? We're going to fall by the sword. Look at 14 and verse 3. Why has the Lord brought us into the land to fall by the sword? Notice also that our wives and our children should become victims. Would it not have been better for us to return to Egypt? So they've gone through all of this where God parts the Red Sea. They've seen the plagues. They come and they get towards the promised land, and they go out and they come back and say, oh, it's a land that flows with milk and honey. But we can't do this. We'd be better off to have just stayed. And if we go into the land, we're just going to die. We're just going to die. And so what they do is they say, well, let's select a new leader and let's return to Egypt. And this is where Moses and Aaron fell upon their faces, and Joshua and Caleb, they tear their clothes. And it's at that moment that we learn what is in the heart of Joshua and Caleb and their faith and their confidence in the Lord. Let's look at Numbers chapter 14. Let's begin reading in verse 7. So Joshua the son of Nun, verse 6, and Caleb the son of Jephunneh, who were among those who had spied out the land, tore their clothes, and they spoke to all the congregation of the children of Israel, saying, the land we pass through to spy out is an exceedingly good land. If the Lord delights in us, then he will bring us into this land and give it to us, a land which flows with milk and honey. Only do not rebel against the Lord, nor fear the people of the land, for they are our bread. Their protection has departed from them, and the Lord is with us. Do not fear them. Do you remember, maybe you're already thinking, I think of a passage as we look ahead. Do you remember after they've wandered in the wilderness for 40 years? Do you remember they come to Jericho? Do you remember what Rahab the harlot tells them? Do you remember what she said? She said, we've heard about your God. We've heard about the parting of the Red Sea. And she basically said exactly what Joshua and Caleb, the people of this city, we are scared to death. And what is it Joshua and Caleb are saying? If the Lord delights and we go into this land, these people, their protection is departed from them. And the Lord is with us. Do not fear them. Do not fear them. But verse 10, and all the congregation said to stone them. Get Joshua and Caleb out of the picture. Stone them to death. And it's at that moment it says, now the glory of the Lord appeared in the tabernacle of meeting before all the children of Israel. God comes and his glory is there at the tabernacle, and he is going to now speak. Now, what he says is he's going to basically say, Moses, I'm just going to start over with you. And this is where he says, well, with the Egyptians hear about this. And he pleads with God, and God changes his mind. But I want you to just think about Joshua and Caleb. The land is exceedingly good land. Look at how they think. The Lord, if he delights in us, he will bring us into the land. Who are they putting all their confidence in? God. Just do not rebel against the Lord. Their protection is gone. The Lord is with us. Do not fear them. But just like at the cross, crucifying, it says their voices prevailed. And so these two men, their voices did not prevail. It was too late. The damage had been created by these 10 spies, and this doubt and this fear was now consuming the multitude. And the plan is, let's stone them, but here the glory of the Lord appears to them. So for us, we need to remember the words of the Apostle Paul. So you think about, well, what do we learn from something like that? Well, if the Lord is for us, who can be against us? That is a powerful passage. You know, our strength comes from God. And we sell him short on what he is capable of doing and what he does because of our lack of faith. But God is for us, and so we can do great things. God's punishment is the Israelites who rejected him. You know what he said? You're not going to see the promised land. You're not going to see the promised land. Look at chapter 14 and verse 30. There is, however, an exception to that. And we saw already that Moses himself was not able to enter into the promised land because of his not giving God the glory. But here's an exception. Except for Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, and Joshua, the son of Nun, you shall by no means enter the land which I swore I would make you dwell in. I will make you dwell in. And I want you to think about how sad that is, that God had told Abraham, who in his great faith, and he's willing to even sacrifice his own son. And it's all because God said, I'm going to give you this land. I'm going to make your descendants like the sand on the sea or the stars. And you remember when Dan Kingsley showed us the innumerable stars, and God says all of that. He says, you're going to have that kind of descendants. But back in 24, we learn more about we're in chapter 14, back in 24. You learn a little bit more about Caleb. And it's not just Caleb, because the same thing is said about Joshua. But he says, but my servant Caleb, because he has a different spirit in him and has followed me fully. Some of the old versions say wholly, wholly. I will bring into the land where he went, and his descendants shall inherit it. He had a different spirit. And that's going to happen. We have to have a different spirit when it comes to our confidence and our trust in God. His mindset is different than the 10 spies. And he followed the Lord fully. Literally, what that means is Caleb was filled with Jehovah. He was serving him totally. You remember the passage we quoted this morning? When we worship, we are supposed to love the Lord our God with all of our heart, our soul, our strength, and our mind. When we serve him, we're to serve him with all of our heart. Totally, completely. And the Bible can do that. Use the word all. But if you also look at Numbers chapter 32, verse 11 and 12, he says, surely none of the men who came up from Egypt from 20 years old and above shall see the land of which I swore to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, because they have not wholly followed me. They weren't totally in, except for Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, the Kenizzite, and Joshua, the son of Nun, for they have wholly followed the Lord. Well, 2 out of 10, that's not very good, is it, when you're talking about all of these people? And these were leaders. These were leaders within their tribes. And look at how their voice could spoil their whole tribe. You have to wonder, the text doesn't tell us, but what was Ephraim's response and Judah's response? Here's their leaders going, we can do this, we can do this. It would seem that even they did not have that confidence. And they were swayed by the 10. And so we have to be careful because the things that we say and our attitudes, of course, can sway people very, very often. Well, they're able to enter into the promised land, something that Moses and Aaron, as we looked at last week, was not able to do. But let's look a little bit closer at Caleb. As we noted, he's a leader of his tribe. Let's turn over to Numbers 34. Numbers 34. And we'll learn a little bit more about Caleb. In chapter 34, he is still leading his tribe. In verse 16, my heading says, the leaders that are appointed to divide the land. So they've come into the promised land. And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, these are the names of the men who shall divide the land among you as an inheritance. Eleazar the priest and Joshua the son of Nun, you shall take one leader of every tribe to divide the land for the inheritance. These are the names of the men from the tribe of Judah, Caleb. Caleb the son of Jephunneh. Okay, 40 years later, who's selected from the tribe of Judah? You remember, the exception is Joshua and Caleb. Everybody that was 20 years and older, they were going to die in the wilderness. 40 years later, he's still selected to lead his tribe. The text says that would make him 85, by the way, and he's still strong as he was as a 40-year-old. And that's in Joshua chapter 14. Let's go ahead, because the other thing is he's a warrior. And he's a warrior at the age of 85. So if you look at Joshua chapter 14, which when we come into the book of Joshua, we know that we are in that time of dividing up the land. Let's look at beginning at verse 6. Then the children of Judah came to Joshua in Gilgal, and Caleb the son of Jephunneh the Kezite said to him, you know the word which the Lord said to Moses, the man of God, concerning you and me in Kadesh Barnea. I was 40 years old when Moses, the servant of the Lord, sent me from Kadesh Barnea to spy out the land, and I brought back word to him as it was in my heart. Nevertheless, my brethren who went up with me made the heart of the people melt, but I wholly followed the Lord my God. So Moses swore on that day, saying, surely the land where your foot has trodden shall be your inheritance, and your children's forever, because you have wholly followed the Lord my God. And now behold, the Lord has kept me alive, as he said, these 45 years. Remember, he's 40. Now it's been 45 years. So he's 85 years old. Ever since the Lord spoke this word to Moses while Israel wandered in the wilderness, and now here I am this day, 85 years old. As yet I'm as strong this day as on the day that Moses sent me, just as my strength was then, so now is my strength for war, both for going out and coming in. Now therefore give me this mountain on which the Lord spoke in that day, for you heard that in the day now that Anakim was there, and how Anakim was there, and that cities were great and fortified, and maybe that the Lord will be with me, and I shall be able to drive them out as the Lord said. And Joshua blessed him and gave Hebron to Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, as an inheritance. Hebron, therefore, became the inheritance of Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, the Kezite, to this day, because he wholly followed the Lord God of Israel. Are you picking up on something? How many times does it have to say he wholly followed the Lord? The name of Hebron formerly was Kirjath Arab. Arab was the greatest man among the Anakim. Then the land had rest from war. So he received his inheritance. And here I wanted to show you that here is Hebron. So here's Jerusalem. So south of Judah, remember, he's of the tribe of Judah. He's asked and he is settling in this area. Let me ask you a question. I don't know that you would remember it. I don't know that I did, but here in Joshua 15, who occupied Hebron? Well, let's look at verse 13 and 14 of chapter 15. Now to Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, he gave a share among the children of Judah according to the commandment of the Lord to Joshua, namely Kiriath Arab, which is Hebron. Arab was the father of Anak. Caleb drove out the three sons of Anak from there, and he names the three the children of Anak. You remember who the children of Anak were when they went in and spied out the land? The children of Anak are there. Who did he drive out? He drove out the giants. You see that? 85 years old, says, I'm still as strong as the first time I went into the land. And he was given Hebron. And the giants that had caused all this great fear and their wilderness wandering, they're the ones that dwelt there. But they were driven out. Now, it's interesting that the words drove out. What does that suggest? Do you remember what they were supposed to do when they came into the land? Were they supposed to just drive them out? No, they were supposed to destroy the people of the land. Now, what's interesting about this is it suggests they didn't kill them. Now, we'll also make mention that Caleb's younger brother, Othniel, was given Caleb's daughter, Aksha, for taking Kirjath Sefer, and Othniel is going to be the first judge in the book of Judges. Now, the fact that he did not drive out Anak, that causes heartaches that we read about in the scriptures. In fact, we see that they just continually be in fact, if you go through the text, it'll say, but they didn't drive them out, or they didn't kill them, they didn't destroy them, they just drove them out. And some of them start taking taxes, if you would, from them. And they didn't do what God said. And so the people of the land become a snare and a stumbling block to them. Well, let's come over to Joshua. Joshua is also, and he's, I think we're more familiar with him than we are with Caleb. But Joshua is a leader and he is a warrior. Let's go to Exodus 17. Let's go back now to Exodus 17. And in this text, verse 8, this is the Amalekites. Beginning in verse 8, now Amalek came and fought with Israel in Rephidim. And Moses said to Joshua, choose us some men and go and fight with Amalek. Tomorrow I will stand on the top of the hill with the rod of God in my hand. So Joshua did as Moses said to him and fought with Amalek. And Moses and Aaron and Hur went up to the top of the hill. And so it was when Moses held up his hand that Israel prevailed. When he let down his hand, Amalek prevailed. But Moses' hand became heavy, so that they took a stone and put it under him, and he sat on it. And Aaron and Hur supported his hand, one on one side and the other on the other side, and his hands were steady until the going down of the sun. So Joshua defeated Amalek and his people with the edge of the sword. Then the Lord said to Moses, write this for a memorial in the book. And we make the point here when we look at this that there's a book where they're being told. You remember we talk about the scriptures. And so here's a book, and they're told to write it down, recounted in the hearing of Joshua, that I will utterly blot out the remembrance of Amalek from under heaven. And Moses built an altar and called it the name, the Lord is my banner. For he said, because the Lord has sworn, the Lord will have war with Amalek from generation to generation. Now, Joshua defeated Amalek so long as his arm was held up. Now, one of the things I remember in Bible class when I was a young guy in, I don't know, 5, 6, 7, somewhere near, my grandmother, when we would stay with my grandmother, she liked to play the, okay, we're going to start with A. And we would go, okay, I've got an A name of the Bible. Well, is it Adam? No, it's not Adam. Is it Aaron? Yeah, you got it. So whoever guessed it now picked a B name. I got H. Guess who I had learned about in Bible class? I'd learned about H-U-R, her. And so I'm sitting here and I'm going, I have an H. And they're guessing, and they're guessing, and they're guessing, and they're guessing. And finally, you get to the point where you say, I don't know, who is it? And I said, her. And my grandmother, who's in her 80s and a student of the Bible, says, oh, there isn't no her. And I was like, yeah, Grandma, I just learned about this in Bible class. Hur was the one selected to hold up Moses' arm. And as you can imagine, I got as long as I keep my arm up. Well, I'm going to tell you, you'll be propping my arm very quick. Because if I start letting down, you start losing. Okay, so you can see why that was necessary. So my grandmother didn't believe it, and I had to prove to her that what I had learned in Bible class was true. So he was a warrior. Now, we also learn here about Amalek. Now, what do you know about Amalek? Or who do you know? Well, the Amalekites, you remember God said to Saul, I want you to destroy the Amalekites. I want you to destroy everything. And you remember he kept Agag? And then when Samuel comes and says, why didn't you do? I did do what we were supposed to do. Then why do I hear all these sheep? Oh, the people took all of them. That was the Amalekites. And so, yes, they were having war with them. And God finally told King Saul, that's it. I want them wiped out. And Saul didn't do it. You remember the consequences? When God finally said, I want them gone, he lost his kingdom because he was rebellious and he was stubborn. We learn in the scriptures. So we have a history that begins here with Joshua in this particular story. Now, one of the things about Joshua, too, is he's Moses' servant. And there's a lot of passages that say this, but we'll look at just one in Exodus 24 and in verse 13. So Moses arose with his assistant Joshua, and Moses went up to the mountain of God. Now, when you start looking at Joshua being Moses' assistant, and it's found a lot, you start realizing that Joshua is there when so many things happen that Moses himself is involved in. Here he's up on the mountain with him. He's there when the Ten Commandments are given. He is his assistant. So it makes it perfectly clear to us that when it comes time to who's going to lead the people into the promised land, because Moses can't go, it would be Joshua, who's been there and has seen all of these things, who is already from the very beginning when we saw him, when his name is first mentioned as Hoshea, and Moses says, you'll be called Joshua. We've seen this man has been a leader for a very, very long time. He was next to Moses on so many important occasions, the giving of the law and on and on. But then one of the things that we are very much in tune to is there in Joshua chapter 24. And we looked this morning, and I'm glad that there's a connection here. We looked this morning at what Joshua said in Joshua 24 and verse 14. And we used that to talk about the importance of our worship. And so we'll look at that again. And we're familiar with 15. Now therefore, fear the Lord, serve him in sincerity, serve him and in truth, and put away the gods which your father served on the other side of the river in Egypt. Serve the Lord. And if it seems evil to you to serve the Lord, choose yourselves this day whom you will serve. And that's putting it to them. It's like you're going to have to make a decision. Are you going to serve the gods which your father served that were on the other side of the river? And that's the River Jordan. You gonna serve them? Or are you going to serve the Lord, the gods of the Amorites in whose land you dwell? But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. And so what do we learn about Joshua? He is determined. He is determined to serve the Lord. And he's done so. He's done so faithfully for so many years. In fact, Lord willing, on next Lord's Day evening, we'll be looking at the judges. And we'll start off by picking up right here in Joshua and what's said about him and his death and things of that nature. But he is determined to serve the Lord. But as we close, here's a passage I want you to look at. Look at verse 29. Because what this is his greatest testament about him. Oh, sure, he's a leader, he's a warrior, he was a servant of Moses. Now it came to pass after these things that Joshua the son of Nun, the servant of the Lord, died, being 110 years old. Why did I say this is his greatest testimony? Because he was servant of the Lord. Not of Moses, he was servant of the Lord. And he died at the age of 110. So from our first introduction to Joshua at the beginning of the lesson to the day of his death, Joshua has been fully serving the Lord. He's another one of those individuals that, just like Joseph, I don't know that we really have much that would say we could say negative. I can't think of any particular story that is recorded where he did something or, you know, he is chastised. I don't know where it is. That doesn't mean it's not there, because I'm prone to not know everything. But our first introduction to here, he is serving the Lord. And he's been a great leader, and he's been a great assistant to Moses, and here he's been the conquering leader that has brought them into the promised land. Well, are you serving the Lord? What can you do? These aren't super individuals. I mean, they're not supernatural. They're people like you and I. It's just they're determined, and they take their talents and they use them. And this is someone that is serving the Lord, and we can do that. And serving God is more than just sitting in a pew, because we're called to be workers in the kingdom. And we're to love our neighbors. We're to love our enemies. We're to love our brethren. And if you serve, if your service to God is not as it should be, well, then that can be corrected and made right. And if there's sin, it needs to be repented of. It needs to be confessed. We need to pray God, and He will forgive us over and over again. Maybe you're here and you're not a Christian. Brother Gary mentioned in his prayer that if someone has not yet obeyed the gospel, that they would do that even this very night. And so we sing an invitation song to encourage you to do that. If you're subject in any way, we invite you to come as we stand and sing.